This episode is sponsored by Law Tiger San Diego. If you or a loved one is injured in a motorcycle accident, call 1-800-LAW-TIGERS for a free case evaluation. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Scenic Ride. This one is a little delayed, so if you've been waiting for a new episode to drop, I apologize for the delay. In my defense, I got really sick, and I was coughing so much that I could barely speak for a few weeks, and that makes it really hard to record a podcast. Anyway, my name is Sana, and if this is your first time listening, this is a podcast focused on the best motorcycle roads in North America and beyond. In each episode, we focus on a different road or region, and I talk to a guest who knows that area really well. In today's episode, we're headed to West Texas to ride FM 170. And a little later, I'll be talking to Stacy Wilt, who runs Ride to Food, about some of the best motorcycle roads around Big Bend National Park. I've had Texas on my mind lately. I think it's because I've had Beyoncé's new song, Texas Hold'em, stuck in my head, which, by the way, is a banger, and it made me think back to one of my favorite road trips of last year. I had just bought my dream motorcycle, a brand new Harley-Davidson Pan America, and I wanted to ride it somewhere epic. I settled on Big Bend National Park in southwest Texas. This is a super remote park, and it's not a place you just happen to be passing through. You have to very specifically want to go there. And I'd been wanting to go to Big Bend forever, but it took buying a new long-haul road trip bike to finally plan the trip. I took the southern route from San Diego through Arizona and New Mexico, and because it was my first long trip on the new bike, I didn't know how much seat time would be doable every day, so I planned conservatively to do around 250 miles per day. But then the bike ended up being so fast and fun and comfortable that I didn't want to stop riding it, so it turned into 400-mile days instead, almost every day. I even added 2 extra states to my itinerary because I was so far ahead of schedule. And all this came in handy in Big Bend. This park is over 1,200 square miles big, which is larger than the state of Rhode Island. So to really experience it, you have to cover some ground. It was over 100 degrees when I visited, and I still rode more than 200 miles just within that park on the same day. I hit up all the scenic drives and rode from one end of the park to the other and back again. And in case you're not looking at a map right now and you're not sure where we are, Big Bend is located in far west Texas in the Chihuahuan Desert. It sits right on the Mexican border along the Rio Grande, and the area is named for, you guessed it, an extra big bend in the Rio Grande. This park has a bunch of scenic drives. It's got canyons and mountains and valleys, and it's so diverse and so beautiful. There's also a border crossing within the park where you can take a small rowboat across the river to Boquillas, Mexico. You'll need your passport and about $10 in cash for a quick day trip. There are 2 restaurants in town on the other side, and you can buy some handcrafted goods from locals, or you can have tacos, which is why most people go there. Just make sure to research which days the border crossing is open. I made the mistake of showing up on a day when it was closed, so I didn't get my tacos. I'll talk about Big Bend a little bit more with Stacy later, but I want to get to the topic of today's episode first, and that's Texas FM 170. FM stands for Farm to Market Road. I looked it up, and according to Wikipedia, a farm-to-market road is, quote, a state highway or county road that connects rural or agricultural areas to market towns. These are better quality roads, usually a highway, that farmers and ranchers use to transport products to market towns or distribution centers, end quote. The 170 runs along the border for 160 miles from just outside Big Bend National Park and northwest to Candelaria. But the really scenic part is the 60-mile stretch between Terlingua and Presidio. This part of the road hugs the Rio Grande and runs straight through the southernmost part of Big Bend Ranch State Park, and it's known as the most scenic road in Texas. I stay the night in Terlingua, which is an old mining town just outside of Big Bend National Park. Today, it's a living ghost town with some restaurants, art galleries, hotels, and an annual chili cook-off, but not a whole lot else. It's extremely remote, and the climate here is unforgiving. I could tell I was in the desert because my hotel room came with scorpions and lizards and roaches and no cell service. Like I said, it gets extremely hot in this area. I was there in late May and it was already in the hundreds, so I did what I usually do, which is get up super early and start writing before sunrise. And I know not everyone loves getting up that early, but writing 170 at sunrise was a really spectacular experience. I had the road completely to myself. I barely saw another vehicle the entire ride. And this road is gorgeous. It actually reminds me of Utah 128, the road we talked about in the last episode of this show, and they're both actually known by locals as the River Road. 170 twists and turns and snakes around the Rio Grande. Sometimes you're high above the river, and sometimes you're so low that you need to look for flooded sections of the road. You'll have Mexico on one side and Big Bend Ranch State Park on the other, and you'll be surrounded by mountains and desert. If you're looking for restaurants or lodging, this is not the place for that. Instead, what you'll find here are campgrounds, hiking trails, and outdoor recreation opportunities. It's not a super long road, and there are gas stations and stores in the small towns you'll pass through outside of the state park boundary, but it's still a good idea to fill up before you start the journey because of the remote location of the area. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, I'll talk to Stacy Wilt about Big Bend, the 170, and more, so don't go anywhere. I am so happy to have Stacy Wilt on the show today. She is the founder of Ride to Food, and she travels by motorcycle more than probably anyone I know. So, Stacy, welcome to the Scenic Ride.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. I'm so glad you're here.
Me too. I am so, so stoked.
Cool. Well, let's start with you. What is Ride to Food for people who don't know?
So, Ride to Food is a motorcycle travel platform that I started essentially in 2018 is when I went full-time with it. And I essentially teach people through YouTube videos and blogs and social media content how to travel on their motorcycles. So, whether it's general education on how to pack your bike or luggage recommendations, or it is learning about a destination or a culture or, of course, food, because we all got to eat, all of that is involved in Ride to Food.
And you just launched a series of talks, I guess, at Harley dealerships. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. So I get asked so many questions about how I pack my motorcycle and how I just go on road trips. You know, I get questions from people asking me just like, how do I even plan a road trip? Where do I begin? Because for some people, that's a very overwhelming thing. And as someone who's traveled over 300,000 miles on their motorcycle, you know, it's just second nature for me. I forget what it's like to be brand new to it. But I've been asked so many times that I decided that I wanted to put these workshops together to essentially teach people the fundamentals and basically walk them through the entire thing. So I actually just did my first one at Red Rock Harley a couple of weeks ago out in Las Vegas. And we did everything. We planned a budget out. We picked a destination. I gave them tips on how to pack a motorcycle so that it stays well balanced and comfortable. We talked about different luggage, different pieces of equipment for your bike and rider ergonomics, the whole nine yards. So there was like 50 people there, which is awesome. And that lots of good questions, lots of good, you know, like audience interaction. So I know people were like really excited to be there, which was cool.
That's so awesome. I'm glad that many people showed up and it sounds like it was super successful.
It was. Yeah, it was really good.
Awesome. So I do want to say that I have so many upcoming episodes in my head that I feel like you would be the perfect guest for. I keep thinking, oh, I should talk to Stacy about that, like Trail Ridge Road in Colorado, Blue Ridge Parkway, pretty much anything in Arizona. So I might have to have you on again at some point. But I figured we should start with Texas, because you're from Texas, right?
Born and raised, yes.
And that's where you learned to ride a motorcycle, too?
Yes, I purchased my first motorcycle when I was living in Austin, and lived there for about 6 years. And so essentially, I learned how to ride in the Texas Hill Country. And yeah, I'm a Texan.
Yes.
Through and through.
Perfect, because I am not a Texan. So I need a real proper Texan to talk about this area with. So I wanted to talk about FM 170, or the River Road, as it's also known, which is funny because the last episode I did, that road is also known as the River Road. I love roads that go along a river. You just can't beat it. But the reason I even found out about the 170 is because you had a YouTube video where you called it the most scenic road in Texas. Do you still stand by that opinion?
1000%. And that is a hill I will die on. Texas has so many different geographies, from the eastern side of the state being home to the piney woods and obviously lots of pine trees, to the hill country being a little bit more arid and desertous, and, you know, being a little hilly. It's not mountainous, but it's hilly. And then you move further west, and then depending on if you're in the Permian Basin or the Big Bend, you get different landscapes. And there's so many different options of things to see all throughout the Lone Star State, but West Texas in general, in my opinion, has the best roads and literal scenic rides. And 170 is by far the best road out there, in my opinion.
It's beautiful. It's not very long, especially the part we're talking about, which is from like Lajitas to Presidio. And I think that's only about 50 miles, but it is so gorgeous.
So I don't know if you know this or not, but Texas doesn't have official scenic byways. It's the only state that does not have an official scenic byways program. There's a website that's called scenictexas.org that I found a couple of years ago, and they have been trying to start an initiative to get 30 different scenic byways created in Texas. And that one is one of them. It's one of the only ones in West Texas, actually. And I'm like, man, if I had a say in it, that would be the first one. Like, that should be if there could only be one, that should be the one. Because like you said, too, with, you know, going right next to the Rio Grande and everything, like, I'm kind of a water baby. If I can ride next to water, oh, I love it. And just seeing the Rio Grande as you're riding next to it, it's so cool.
Yes. And the Scenic Byways program thing is actually really interesting, because you mentioned that also in your YouTube video. So I was looking it up. And as of May of 2021, Texas did pass a state Scenic Byways program bill that was signed into law by the governor. Nothing has happened as far as like national scenic byways go. So for those who are listening who might not know, there's a national scenic byways program that is managed by the Federal Highway Administration. And so there's a total of 184 national scenic byways in the U.S., which honestly isn't that many, considering how many scenic roads there are in this country and how big this country is. But the fact that Texas is one of just like two states, I think, that has zero national scenic byways is wild, because Texas is massive. And like we just mentioned, there's at least one road that should be on that list.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, for sure.
Are there any other roads in Texas that you can think of that should be on the list?
As far as national highways go, or like all American roads, you know, the Ross Maxwell Scenic Drive in Big Bend National Park is also incredible. It just takes you through so many different landscapes out in Big Bend National Park, which is obviously very close to the River Road, Highway 170. But I just think that shows such a good like change of scenery, and it's just so scenic. I think that, I don't know, can national park roads be all American roads? Do you know?
I was wondering that too. I don't think they are. I think that program is focused on non-national park roads.
I think so too. I should know the answer to that, but I don't.
I should also.
But that one I think would be a really good one too. Yeah, there may be something down by the coast or something, but Galveston and the Gulf Coast, it's not as pretty as if you go towards Florida. You know, it's if you're from Texas, you'll appreciate it. But if you're not from Texas, you'll be like, that looks like a mud puddle. Why is this considered a scenic road? And it's like, okay.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of riding in Texas personally. I've done the Big Bend area, and I've also done the Route 66 part of Route 66 that goes through Texas and that goes through the Panhandle. So it is not beautiful, but I have ridden through Palo Duro Canyon State Park, just took a little detour off of Route 66 from Amarillo, and that was gorgeous as well, just that road into the canyon. That would be on my list too, which it is a state park, but so is the 170 that goes through Big Bend Branch State Park. So I'm assuming state park roads could maybe be on the scenic byways list. We should educate ourselves on this.
We should. It's fun. You know, Big Bend Ranch State Park, did you happen to go into the park while you were out there? Because you were on your Pan America when you went, right?
Yeah, I did not ride any off-road like stuff at all.
Okay, because that is one thing that's really unique about West Texas is, so Texas as a state is mostly privately owned land. There isn't a lot of public lands out there. So if you are into overlanding or you are into off-road riding in general, as far as adventure bikes go, that's where everyone goes to ride in Texas. There's so much off-road riding out there because it's just so vast inside the national park as well as inside the state park. Big Bend Ranch State Park is actually all unpaved. There's a 27-mile route that starts near Presidio. It goes into the interior of the park and comes back out. So you have to come back to Presidio to leave. And there's, I want to say, over 70 miles of unpaved, like more technical off-road riding out there. But that's a park I've always wanted to check out beyond just riding the river road, just because I've heard really great things. But I want to get a little bit better at off-road riding before I go out there because it is very remote. It's definitely a more remote area than even Big Bend. So,
yeah, that's how I feel too. I was on a solo trip on a fully loaded Pan America with, you know, stock tires. I'm not about to go off-roading in like a super remote area. But I would definitely be down to do it in a group. That sounds amazing. Definitely. Because that's the thing about like FM 170, I think, is you can just ride the road on the street and it is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. But it's not that long. There's not that much to do along the road. There are no, like, at least that part that goes through the state park, there's no restaurants or really anything to stop for other than scenic overlooks and some hiking trails maybe. But to actually spend a full day or a couple of days in that area and really get to explore it, I think would be the way to take it to the next level.
Definitely. There's so many little towns in West Texas that are worth checking out, and they all have like their own quirky little vibe to them, or just historical importance. There's a lot to do. You can easily spend a week in West Texas and still have so much to see. And it is so far. It doesn't matter if you're in Texas. You know, you from Austin, it's an 8-hour drive. From El Paso, it's, I think, 150, maybe 160 miles. I might be underestimating that a little bit. But it's not close to anything. But I think that's what makes it so unique is it is just so far out there. So once you're there, it's like, okay, let's enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, Big Bend National Park has several roads that goes into the park. It's still very remote, but this road, the 170, you have to pretty much know about it to even be able to find it. And you have to really want to go there because it is not really on the way to anything. It's not necessarily the fastest route from like Marfa to Big Bend. It is a route from Marfa to Big Bend. But you have to seek it out. So you've ridden that road more than once. That means you really want to ride it.
Oh, yeah. It is absolutely worth the detour. There's three different ways you can get into Big Bend National Park. And I've been out to the park, I want to say 3 times now, maybe 4 times. And every time I ride that road, It doesn't matter if it's on my way out and I'm leaving or if it's on my way in, but I will make it a point to make that a part of my trip every single time. And anytime someone tells me they're going to Big Bend, I'm like, listen, if there's anything advice-wise that you ever take from me, it's that you ride that road while you're out there.
Yes, that is very good advice. And I'm glad I watched your video before going out there too.
I'm glad too.
But let's talk about Big Bend National Park too, because that's part of the area. And you can't go to one without the other. If you're riding the River Road, you are going either to or from Big Bend National Park. Like, that is just part of it. You have to go there. So you've been there a few times. Have you done the border crossing into Mexico through the park?
I haven't. And it's at the top of my bucket list beyond, other than going to the hot springs. I also haven't gotten to go to the hot springs. But the year that I went and I stayed at the Rio Grande Village, which is the closest campground to the Boquillos Crossing, it was during the pandemic and my campsites were actually booked far beyond, like pandemic things happening. I had no realization that was going to happen while I was there. So while I was there, they closed the border crossing and they also closed the national park. So they kicked me out of my campsite. They're like, you got to go somewhere else. And I was like, I have no cell phone service. I don't know what's going on in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. So I tried. I was so close to getting tacos, but it didn't happen.
I was so close too. I rode all the way out to, you know, that village is not hard to get there, but you have to want to go there. It's the same thing. It's so remote. It's just a out and back road it's far.
Yes.
So I rode all the way out to the border crossing. And then I realized that it's only open on like Thursday through Sunday or something like that. And I was there on a Tuesday. So I had ridden from San Diego to this border crossing, carrying my passport only so I could cross the border into Mexico and have tacos. And it was not open that day. So I just turned around and went back. But one day, maybe we'll actually get tacos.
I think that it is well worth a trip back. And, you know, going back to just discussing Big Bend National Park, there's so much to do out there. That ride out there, did you happen to go to the Boquillos Canyon while you were there? Did you keep taking that road down from where the border crossing is?
Yes.
Yep. So I think that is a very underrated end of the park. Everyone goes to the Santa Elena Canyon because it's just the more iconic, larger canyon. And that's at the end of the Ross Maxwell Scenic Drive. And I think that the Boquillos Canyon is worth checking out. Sometimes there's wild horses down there, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Very unexpected too, as you're kind of hiking through the canyon and there's just horses there. But there's also the Chisos Basin. And if you've never been in the Chisos Basin, it's totally worth it to go up there. It is like a completely different world from the rest of the park. Were you able to go up there while you were there?
Yeah, I did. It was so beautiful.
Yeah. And I want to say the basin is actually like an old volcano. Like, it's just a gigantic crater and you can camp up there. And I've camped up there and it's so cool because you can see the Milky Way at night. And it's just like, it's a dark sky park. So the skies are incredibly dark. You can see the Milky Way. It's incredible. I could fangirl over Big Bend National Park all day because it's just so pretty.
It's such a good park for riding too. I spent a full day in the park and I think I rode over 200 miles of just park roads. You know, it's a lot of those like out and back roads. So you go to the end of a road and then you have to turn around and come back and it adds up because it's a large park. I tried to do Santa Elena Canyon, but the road out there was flooded, so I couldn't actually make it all the way. It was also over 100 degrees, so it was very hot. But going up to the Chisos Mountains, it was so much cooler up there and just a completely different type of landscape than other parts of the park. When you camped in the basin, did you have to book a campsite like well in advance for that?
So I'm really good at camping during shoulder seasons and off seasons. The Chisos Basin, like you said, because it's higher in elevation, a lot of people don't enjoy camping there once it gets colder, like October, November. And I was there in late October, if I remember correctly. And I did book campsites ahead of time, but it was maybe a month in advance. It wasn't too bad. But there are times of year where it is virtually impossible to get a campsite there. So.
And how cold was it? I mean, was it obviously you're on a motorcycle, so you're limited in what you can bring, but it was still doable.
It was doable. I want to say it was down into the 30s at night. Granted, I do a lot of cold weather camping. I am notorious for doing motorcycle trips in the shoulder seasons because I just don't want to travel to places when they're packed with people. I'd rather be a little cold at night and deal with less people in the parks or wherever I am during the day. So I just have colder weather camping gear, but I thought it was fine. It can snow up there, and that's more of the issue, I would say, with motorcycle traveling into the Chisos Basin in the colder months, is you don't know what could possibly happen, because weather out there can be kind of crazy sometimes, but snow isn't that common. I'll just leave it at that. It doesn't snow. It might snow once a year. So.
And it probably will snow later in the season, too. Like, October is still pretty early.
Pretty early, yeah.
And then there are all these dirt roads that we kind of touched on earlier in the park. I didn't really do any of those because, again, don't want to do dirt by myself. Did you end up doing any dirt roads when you were there on the Pan America?
No. So when I got to go out, let me rephrase this. I have not been back to Big Bend National Park since I took an off-road training course. So I was still very new to adventure riding the last time I got to go to Big Bend, especially on a Pan America. And I had the street tires on it, the 80/20 tires. I did not have any kind of satellite communicator with me. And I had talked to a park ranger who had a KTM, and he was a big adventure rider guy. And I was asking him how some of the road conditions were, even Old Maverick Road. Old Maverick Road is a shorter dirt road, and usually it's pretty tame. It'll take you from Santa Elena Canyon towards Trilingua within the park boundaries. And normally that's a pretty easy road to ride. And he told me that it was really washed out and really sandy, and that if I wasn't comfortable riding in any type of sand, I should not attempt it. And when he told me that, I pretty much gave up hope of attempting anything in the park. Because at that same time, the Hot Springs Road was also washed out from a flash flood. So it's just one of those things that happens out there. And since that flash flood happened that year, and that was in 2021, I believe, a lot of the other off-road routes in the park have became less maintained. I know that Old Ore Road and the River Road are definitely much more technical roads. They're much more difficult, especially on a motorcycle, to go through. I definitely wouldn't be trying those anytime soon.
Those ones
are hardly on a bike.
I think they're probably, you're better off doing those on a slightly smaller bike than, you know, a big old 1250 that weighs 600 pounds. That's a lot.
Especially by yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that good. And I'm okay with admitting it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I feel like I've done a lot of adventure riding, but I just, the more I learn about adventure riding, the more scared I get of it. And the worse of a rider I become. It's a little bit of a dilemma for me, actually.
It's just all in your head. You know, it's not to get too off topic, but once you drop one of those motorcycles on top of you, I don't know if you've had that opportunity yet with your Pan America, but once you do that off road and you're off camber or you're stuck in sand, which I've gotten to do both of those, dropping it on top of me, it's not fun, especially when you can't, you know, get your leg out from underneath it. So definitely going into the backcountry, especially in a place like Big Bend, if you're not ready, you can really get screwed, especially when it's hotter out, because you might not come across another person for the rest of the day. It's just that remote sometimes. So
I think that's really good advice, not just for off-roading in the Big Bend area, but for riding on pavement too, because it is so remote. It gets extremely hot for like a big part of the year. It's super hot out there, and cell service is very limited and almost like there's no cell service in a lot of places. So I think people just need to really make sure they carry water. There is a gas station in the park, but it still doesn't hurt to carry extra gas because of how remote this area is. And then have some snacks and layers and everything else. But let's segue from snacks into what your expertise is, which is food. I'm a terrible person when it comes to recommending food stops on road trips, because that's like, if I try to travel on a budget, I always cut down on my food expenses. I carry like food thermoses and I just like bring leftovers with me, and I almost always pack a lunch with me. I try to limit my food expenses as much as possible. Your whole brand is getting food on the road, though, so you're a much better person to ask about this. There obviously isn't a lot of there aren't a lot of food options within Big Bend National Park. I think there's a lodge and maybe like a couple of, you know, convenience stores, but that's about it. So what would you recommend for people who want to have a good meal in the general area?
Y'all better start taking notes. I have gotten to spend, you know, a handful of trips out there and some time out there over the years. So distance is kind of relative in terms of Big Bend, just because essentially everyone knows that if you're going to go to the park, you're going to be traveling. But the closest town is Terlingua, and Terlingua definitely has a handful of different food options. The Starlight Theater is by far the most popular spot. It's kind of like a thing you have to do when you go to Terlingua. So with that being said, expect it to be busy, because Terlingua is so remote as well. And even though there is, you know, we'll call it 10 places to eat there, there might be a little more now. That's it. That is like the hub where everyone goes to eat. So if it's a Friday or Saturday, every place is going to be pretty busy. But yeah, the Starlight Theater is popular. If you like pizza, Long Draw Pizza is also a place that a lot of people recommend. If you love Texas style barbecue, which I am a huge fan of, DB's Rustic Iron Barbecue out there is phenomenal. I would ride back to Big Bend just to eat there. Wow. Their brisket, it's so good. I actually ordered extra brisket the last time I was there, and I took it back to my campsite at the Chisos Basin, and I mixed it in with like my ramen noodles for the night.
Dude, this is also why I need a proper Texan to be on the show, because I don't even eat meat, so this is all completely lost on me.
As I was thinking about us doing this podcast, I was like, okay, she's vegetarian. I don't know if I have any vegetarian options for her, maybe in Marfa, but yeah, in Terlingua though, I want to say it's like Taqueria El Milagro or something. I'm probably completely butchering that or messing the name up, but that's another good spot. They have all kinds of different tacos there that are more like authentic Mexican style tacos. Very simple, but I've heard really great things about that place. I will say a quirky thing about the Big Bend area is that the hours at a lot of places are not consistent, just because you don't have, you know, enough manpower to keep it open, or there's not enough traffic during, you know, a Tuesday for all the businesses to stay open. So everyone kind of switches their business hours up, it seems. Obviously, in the summer, the hours might be different than they are in the winter. But definitely checking online before you kind of plan your trip, just seeing what's out there is a really great idea, because you just never know. And the other close towns to Big Bend, there's Lajitas. So Lajitas is kind of like the last stop where you can get gas or food before you take the river road to Presidio. There is the Thirsty Goat Saloon there. And if you decide to stay in that area, obviously I'm not recommending you drink and ride your motorcycle, but they make a great prickly pear margarita. They also have some nicer, higher end foods like expensive steaks and whatnot. And they have a really great lodge out there as well. That's a really cool place to stop. I've never stopped in Presidio, so I unfortunately don't have any recommendations there. But as far as super close to the park, that's as close as it gets. If you move out towards Marathon, which is the closest town to the Persimmon Gap entrance to the park, you have the Gage Hotel, and there's a little coffee shop there, and they have some food. There's also the French Grocer, and that's kind of like the little general store. And I want to say they have some sandwiches and some other stuff there. I've actually never gotten to eat there. But there is also a brewery in that town, Brick Vault Brewery and Barbecue. And same thing, they're known for having Texas-style barbecue. I think they made it on the Texas Monthly Top 50 list, which is like a very prestigious thing to be a part of in Texas. Like when you make that list, it's like you've made it in life if you're a barbecue person. So, but that's it. That's pretty much all there is in Marathon. It's very small. So,
yeah, I stay the night in Alpine on the way into the park, and then I rode through Marathon and came in through that entrance. But yeah, there's not a lot there. There's also not a ton in Alpine, but that's another one of those kind of gateway towns that has at least a few options and a couple of hotels and stuff like that too.
Yeah, I will say, so Alpine, a cool thing to do there, it's not food, but if you have the time and you enjoy just education and history, on the college campus, there is the Museum of the Big Bend. And I would highly recommend spending, you know, planning for an hour, probably 2 hours walking through that museum. It's been a long time since I visited it, but it was incredible. And I learned so much about the region. I would highly, highly recommend checking that out. But as you're talking about lodging, that's a great place, especially if you just want a hotel chain it. That's one of the only places in the Big Bend area that has a lot of hotels. So
yeah, that's a good spot for that. And also, since we're talking about like some other little detours from Alpine, there's an observatory up in the mountains just north of town. It's called the McDonald Observatory. And if you are on a long road trip, you're riding through Texas and you're ending up on a lot of straight roads and you just want to take a break and do some like fun twisties, the road up to the observatory is really fun and really twisty. And that's a good little detour as well.
I recommend that one as well. When you happen to go to the observatory, did you make the entire loop around the Davis Mountains?
Yes.
So that I would, when you were asking me earlier, like, are there any good other rides you really like out there? I would say that one's also in my top three list. So Ross Maxwell and Big Bend, River Road, and then the Davis Mountain Loop. That one is incredible. You do need to watch for deer, depending on, you know, when you're out there, but that, and even mountain lions, those are out there too. But that road is incredible. And like the mountains just look so crazy on the backside of it. When you kind of get halfway through, it just, they're very jagged and they're just unique. It's a very iconic image of Texas because the road's also like really straight underneath them. As you're riding it, you're just like, wow, this is so badass.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. There's a lot of, I really enjoyed West Texas. Again, I have not spent that much time in the state, but that area I will definitely go back to.
Yeah, it's incredible. And if you go just north of there, so I'm trying to think of what that road is. I want to say it's Highway 17 that will take you basically from Fort Davis to Marfa. If you take it north out of Fort Davis and you head towards Balmorhea, which is right off the interstate, Interstate 10, Balmorhea is a very small town, but that's where Balmorhea State Park is. And if you're riding through West Texas and it's 100 degrees out, I highly recommend stopping at Balmorhea State Park because it's a spring-fed pool. So the water's ice cold. I was actually doing a 1K in a day 1 year headed from Austin to Phoenix, and it was 105 out. So I stopped and like dunked in for a little bit because I needed to cool off.
Oh, that's amazing.
But the road is incredible too. And, you know, talking about rock formations and how the mountains just look so different out there, that little section from Fort Davis to Balmorhea is so cool. Like it's so beautiful, but the rocks just look different. I don't even know how to like explain them, but they're cool.
I'm adding that to my list right now. That sounds awesome.
Yes. That whole area is just gorgeous. I even like the stretch that goes from Fort Davis to Marfa. It's not as scenic, but it's still great. At golden hour, it's prime. It is so pretty. It makes you want to cry, but
yes, in a good way.
Yes. And in a good way for sure.
I think that's all I had on this area. So is there anything you want to add or anything you want to plug, that any fun projects that you're working on?
Man, I would love to get back to Texas. Speaking of projects.
Yeah.
That would be a dream. You know, for me this year, I'm chasing my adventure bike dream. I hope I get to have a Pan America sometime soon. That would be awesome. We need to do a road trip on Pan Americas because yeah. I think that would be really cool.
Yes.
But no, this year I'm kind of focused on trying to go to new places. I guess, you know, some places that are on my list are the Upper Peninsula, the UP in Michigan. I've never been up there, so I'd really like to check that out. Pictured Rocks and that whole area. I've never seen the Outer Banks, and I've never been to the tip of Maine. So I'm going to try and get to those this year. The North Cascades, I know you've been there. That's also on my list. So hopefully I can hit at least a couple of those, but we'll see what happens.
There's so many places to go and so little time to do it. So just a final thing, if people want to follow you or see what you're up to, where can they find you?
Ride to Food. So ridetofood.com or Ride to Food on pretty much any social channel.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing the show. I really enjoyed talking to you about all of this.
Definitely. And holler if you have any questions about any other place in the future.
Absolutely. Will do. That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much to Stacy for joining me, and I hope you all got some inspiration for your next road trip. As always, check out our website, thescenicride.com, to sign up for our newsletter and to find all episodes with show notes. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me for the next one. In the meantime, enjoy the ride. The Scenic Ride is written and produced by me, Sana Bowman. Our theme music is by Ryan Sin. If you like the show, please rate and review it and tell your friends to listen. For all the latest updates, follow at The Scenic Ride on Instagram and Facebook or visit thescenicride.com.